beginnings again. Photo finish. The headmaster was determined that the lessons learned at the ecology exhibition should be put to good use. So, on Monday, when he took a lesson with Form 3, he said, "I want you to write a personal letter to one of the ecologists whom you met on Saturday. Ask questions. Find out more information. I'm sure they'll be willing to help." There was no doubt in Jennings' mind about whom he was going to write to. Dr. O'Connor, whose wallet he had retrieved on the underground, was an ecologist. He had asked him about trees. Ask him what must be done to stop the destruction of the rainforests. On Friday, when the post arrived, there was one letter of topical interest amongst the headmaster's correspondence. It said, "Dear Headmaster, I was delighted to receive a letter yesterday from young Jennings. I expect he has told you about what happened on the underground, and I can only say how grateful I am to him for coming to my aid at a moment of crisis. He refused to accept any financial reward, but as it is clear from his letter that he is keen about tree conservation, I am taking the liberty of dispatching, by courier, a young maple tree, which I am hoping you will allow him to plant in the school garden. Yours sincerely, Bernard O'Connor." Mr. Pemberton Oakes smiled. Jennings again, he thought. The tree arrived the next morning, and the tree-planting ceremony was planned for Sunday afternoon. Furthermore, the news of Dr. O'Connor's gift spread rapidly and sparked off a wave of enthusiasm for tree conservation throughout the school. Everybody ought to plant his own tree. Think of all the carbon dioxide and poisonous gases it'd mop up if everybody did it, Temple argued at breakfast time. I vote we all ask for trees for Christmas presents. At Form 1 table, trees were also the topic of conversation, and Blotwell did his best to explain to Binns the complexities of photosynthesis. "It's all about breathing, really," he said. "Stop eating for half a second and take a deep breath." Binns did so. "Now, when you breathe out again, it isn't fresh air anymore. It's a dangerous gas called carbon something." Binns exhaled quickly. "Better get rid of it at once, then." "It's all right. It won't kill you in small doses, because the tree breathes it in and turns it back into fresh air again."
"Which tree?"
"Any tree you like. They all do it." Binns considered for a moment. "I'd have to be standing pretty close to the tree for that to work, shouldn't I?" "Not really, so long as it's got enough breathing space," Blotwell explained. "The tree breathes it out through its leaves, you see. It hasn't got any nostrils." Was Blotwell pulling his leg? Binns wondered. Old Blot has talked such a lot of piffle, you never knew what to believe. Of course trees didn't have nostrils. Everybody knew that. After breakfast, Binns went outside, breathed deeply, and emptied his lungs several times against the bark of a willow tree growing near the junior football pitch. He couldn't be sure that the tree breathed back at him, though he thought it might have done so. However, he reckoned he'd given the willow enough carbon something to keep it busy for a while. After lunch, Jennings got to work. The ceremony was attended by a number of would-be helpers, amongst whom Derbyshire had pride of place. It would be his job to hold the tree upright against a stake, while Jennings, having dug the hole, piled the earth back around the roots. But the ground was hard, so after 10 minutes of strenuous but unskillful digging, Mr. Carter and Mr. Wilkins took turns with spade and fork, and the work continued. When the job was done, Jennings frowned critically and said, "It isn't very big, is it? Not much taller than me." "Come back and have a look at it in 10 years' time," Mr. Carter told him. "Both you and the tree will have grown up a lot by then." The following week, a break in the school routine occurred when Mr. Openshaw of Messrs. Scuttlewell and Openshaw photographers drove over from Dunanbury to take the school's photograph. Form 1, with knees scrubbed clean for the occasion, sat on rugs in the foreground. Behind them was a row of chairs for members of staff. senior boys stood behind, and the middle-ranking forms balanced themselves unsteadily 2 feet above ground level on a row of wobbling benches in the rear. For a group photograph of such width, Mr. Openshaw used a camera which swiveled round from side to side through an arc wide enough to take in the whole body of the school in a single panoramic sweep. The movement of the camera was controlled by clockwork, and Mr. Openshaw warned his sitters of the importance of keeping still while the camera was in motion. "It moves around quite slowly," he told them when the school had taken their places. "So don't move, don't sneeze, don't scratch your nose if it itches." Several boys whose noses had not been itching now felt an uncontrollable urge to scratch. Then Mr. Openshaw said, "Right, everybody ready?" They were all ready, apart from Jennings, who was still indoors looking for his outdoor shoes. They'd been in his locker last night, he felt sure of that. But somehow, in the bustle of getting ready to go outside, some clumsy classmate had sent them skimming across the boot room in the search for his own footwear. Through the boot room window, Jennings heard the hum of voices die away as the school settled down in their places and Mr. Openshaw made sure that all was ready. Just then, he saw his shoes behind the radiator. Just in time, he thought, putting them on in frantic haste. He wouldn't be late after all. He rushed out onto the playground and jumped on to the end of the nearest bench just as the clockwork whirred into action and the camera started to revolve. Within seconds, Jennings' image had been recorded forevermore as the boy on the extreme left in the back row. The camera moved on. Parslow, an older boy standing next to him, muttered, "Get out, Jennings. You're in the wrong place. This is Form 4. Your lot are down at the other end." Parslow was right, Jennings realised. Derbyshire would be keeping a place for him amongst his classmates on the Form 3 bench. Perhaps there was still time to join them. So he jumped down from the bench and scurried at full speed behind the shield of motionless bodies till he reached the other end of the row. Sure enough, there was a vacant space next to Derbyshire. So he jumped up and stood beside him. The lens was moving towards the end of its semicircular sweep. It focused on Derbyshire, then on Jennings, and seconds later switched itself off. Jennings' likeness was captured for all time as the boy on the extreme right in the back row. The school relaxed, rose from chairs, jumped off perches and scratched noses that had been twitching for the previous 30 seconds. "Why on earth were you so late?" Derbyshire demanded as they helped to carry the benches back indoors. "I couldn't find my shoes. It was just starting when I got outside, so I jumped up on the bench next to Parslow." "But they were all fourth formers down at that end." "Yes, I know. That's why I got down and came along to join you." It didn't occur to him until later that what he had done might have had an effect on the school photograph, which he had not foreseen at the time. It was on the last day of term, when the boys were ready to go home, that proofs of the school photograph arrived at Linbury Court. A copy, pinned to the notice board in the staff room, aroused Mr. Carter's interest, and for a moment or so he stood scanning the rows of faces, looking back at him from the print. Some of them wore beaming smiles, others wore a self-conscious smirk, or the glazed expression of a hypnotized rabbit, but on the whole, the result was good. There was, however, one aspect of the photograph that struck Mr. Carter as unusual. He looked again, then raised despairing eyes to the ceiling. "Oh, no, not Jennings again," he cried. "Come and have a look at this, Wilkins." His colleague was packing up some books to take home for the Christmas holidays. He came across and ran his eye over the photograph. "That's... come out very well, hasn't it? Mr. Wilkins observed genially. Binns and Blotwell have actually brushed their hair. Venables has remembered to tuck his shirt in. I see Derbyshire is wearing his usual stuffed owl expression, and Jennings is... Oh, my goodness! His voice faltered, and he stood staring at the photograph, his eyes swivelling from left to right and back again, like a spectator at a tennis match. This is preposterous! Jennings is in twice! Exactly, Mr. Carter confirmed. Unless, of course, unknown to you and me, we have another boy in the school with precisely the same physical features. It's nothing to make a joke about, Mr. Wilkins said angrily. It's a serious matter. There was a knock at the staff room door, which opened to admit Jennings, brimming over with the carefree high spirits that infect every boy on the last day of term. Hello, Mr. Carter, sir. Hello, Mr. Wilkins. I'm just off, so I just looked in to say goodbye and wish you a... He broke off, puzzled by the lack of goodwill, obvious in Mr. Wilkins' icy look. Quietly, Mr. Carter said, Have you seen the school photograph, Jennings? No, not yet, sir. Come and have a look at it now. Jennings crossed the room and looked at it. He gave a little gasp of recognition. Wow! Fossilized fish hooks! I'm in it at both ends! You certainly are, Mr. Carter agreed. Why? I didn't know I was. Honestly, sir, I thought the camera had gone past Parsley when I got there, so I rushed off to the other end so as not to be left out. Sorry, sir, I didn't think.
You didn't think? Typical! Fumed Mr. Wilkins, who was not prepared to let the matter drop. You've completely ruined the school photograph. By next term it will be framed and hanging up in the assembly hall. The headmaster will be taking visitors around the school. What are they going to think when they see the same boy in the picture twice over?
Jennings furrowed his brow in thought. They'll think I'm identical twins, sir.
Go! Oh! Mr. Wilkins clapped his hand to his head and went for a short walk round the table to relieve his feelings. Having calmed down a little, he said, You really are a silly little boy, Jennings.
Yes, sir. I know, sir. Sorry, sir.
You'd better run along now, said Mr. Carter. Have a good holiday.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. Same to you. In the doorway, he turned and favoured both masters with his irrepressible smile. See you next term.
As the door closed behind Jennings, Mr. Wilkins heaved a deep sigh. Identical twins, he muttered. Two Jenningses. Two identical twin Jenningses. Oh, the mind boggles at the thought.
Mr. Carter laughed.
Don't worry, Wilkins. He'll grow up in time, like his maple tree.
But Mr. Wilkins was looking again at the photograph. Then he turned to his colleague and said,
I tell you, Carter, one Jennings in the school is more than enough for my peace of mind. Whatever would it be like if there were two?
Jennings Again was written and adapted by Anthony Buckeridge, read by Stephen Fry, and produced by Anne Hines.